Hello and welcome back to the second half of The Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and with me on the line from Salt Lake City is Shane Taylor from Cactus and Tropicals. And we're going to talk about a couple of different topics, but the first one I wanted to explore was taking care of your poinsettia now that you've still got it in your home. Shane, thanks for joining me on the program.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be here.
Well, it's been a couple of years since we last spoke, but I've been into cactus and tropicals, and I thought, you know, let's have Shane on. We haven't talked in a while, and I was looking at my own poinsettia sitting on the table and wondering, okay, how do I want to extend this? I've learned from past experience that I don't want to keep it to try to keep it to the next year because it was just way too much work. I mean, I got it to rebloom, but it just never looked quite the same. So I don't want to go that far, but how can I keep my poinsettia looking well for at least a couple more weeks?
Well, one of the things to consider is as a poinsettia finishes its flowering period, it's actually waking up a bit. When poinsettias are blooming, they're pretty much kind of in a dormant state where they don't do a whole lot of active growth. The plant really isn't doing anything other than trying to attract pollinators and make seeds. So when that starts ending and you do start seeing that new growth out, it's a good idea to move your poinsettia into a brightly lit location. Now, these plants, they're forest floor plants, so they don't need a whole lot of really strong direct sun, but they do prefer a really bright location, and that's sometimes a tricky thing in the house. But if you can get them in a good brightly lit room, maybe near a window, maybe even with a little bit of morning sun or late evening sun, and then just watching your water, doing a lot of what you've been doing through the holiday season with trying to let the surface dry out, but not letting the soil go completely dry all the way through. They can last for quite a while, and in fact, some people do keep them season after season, and sometimes are able to get them to rebloom by using some tricks of the light and also using some fertilizers and other things to encourage them to produce those big flowering bracts once again.
Well, they're so inexpensive that unless you just savor the challenge, it's not worth it.
Yeah. It is one of those things. Most people, they enjoy them, and then they're destined for their compost heap afterwards. And it is hard. It's always hard, a plant that you enjoy, to throw away. And I very much appreciate the fact that there are people who are willing to at least give it a try and see what they can do.
I've got to say, my mother's green thumb has always dictated to me, genetically, I feel, that you don't throw anything out, and the poinsettia was the only thing I finally succumbed to, but everything else I pretty well hold on to. So with the one that I've got, it's been in the kitchen, which is on the north side of my house. Have I already done it lethal damage? It still looks pretty good. I could stick it into my living room, which is on the south side and gets a ton of light.
Well, that will just allow the new growth that will occur to develop a little bit healthier. If it looks good, then it's okay. That's a good rule of thumb with a plant is unless it's a slow-growing plant like a cactus, looks will definitely be a good first indicator of the health of the plant. And if a poinsettia looks good, it's healthy.
Should I be giving it any fertilizer at all?
During this time of growth, you could give it something with a little bit more nitrogen in it, because that's what it will be using at this point. So something with, when you're looking at packages of fertilizers, of course you see those three numbers on the package, and the first number is going to be the nitrogen. And using a fertilizer with a slightly higher nitrogen level helps. Also, to acidify the soil a little bit, to help it feel like it's in that forest environment, that helps as well. And a lot of purely nitrogen fertilizers are also acidic fertilizers. You can do some natural fertilizing, though, with your old coffee grounds. I know a lot of people who are very successful with those. Save some of your coffee grounds, and on occasion work some of those into the soil, and as they break down, they will release some of those organic nutrients as well as acidify the soil, which makes the plant happy.
So these plants are growing in a forest, a tropical forest?
Mexico, yeah. So subtropical to tropical. forest floor dwellers. So again, plants that grow on the forest floor are going to be a little bit more prone to sunburn and to damage if you get them in a really hot, sunny spot. They won't do as well as if they're just in a really well, brightly lit location.
Can they be grown outdoors anywhere in the U.S.?
There are actually varieties of ornamental poinsettias that make great annual bedding plants, here, even here in Utah. And we bring them in the shop every spring just for the beautiful color of the leaves, not even for their flowers, but just for the fact that they're just such bright, vibrant colors to stick in a container that you're not needing to overly feed to get that great color.
Do they work better than a caladium? I just had the worst luck with trying to grow caladiums.
You know, caladiums are so sensitive. I'd say they're maybe a step up from a caladium. They're not too far in the better direction because caladiums are so sensitive to cold, which a lot of the poinsettias are as well. So you got to be careful about how early in the season that you plant them. But caladiums also have some other issues where when they wilt, when they get a little bit too dry, caladium will wilt, and when you water it, the stem, as it pulls that water into the stem, will then solidify into the wilted position. So your plant will always look wilted once it wilts.
And I'm a lazy gardener, and that's what I always found out. I'm like, okay, these things just aren't going to look good in my garden.
Yeah, and poinsettias don't do that. So,
would you still grow a poinsettia in a shady area?
Yes, definitely. They would be intended for shade gardens along with begonias and impatiens and plants like that.
And for indoors, when you start seeing leaves dropping off on the bottom, is that going to be natural or are you doing something you shouldn't be?
I would say that's fairly normal. And you see that a lot of times on any kind of plant that's adjusting from a higher light living environment to a lower light living environment. Because what it's going to want to do is only sustain enough of its foliage that's necessary for the amount of light that it's receiving. So when it's being grown, these poinsettias are grown in these giant greenhouses that are brightly lit, and they've got just the perfect amount of light. You know, they've got shades above them so they don't get too much direct sun, but it's usually much brighter than our home. And so poinsettias will start shedding from the lower portions of the plant. And that actually you'll see on a variety of different houseplants when you perhaps just bring them home from the shop or the seasons are changing from the brighter summer days to the darker winter days, is you'll notice plants tend to shed from the bottom up or from the inside out when they're just adjusting. And that's okay. If your poinsettia starts shedding from the top down, that means you've got major problems.
Hmm. And logically, how long do you think, if you're not going to keep a poinsettia until the next year, how long do we think we should be able to expect to keep it if we water it and fertilize it as well as it should be?
Well, I think that varies.
Yeah.
But it kind of comes down to the how long can you stand to keep it. A lot of people, just with basic care, you can keep them around for quite a while, but then again, you know, it's like keeping the Christmas tree up or keeping a wreath on your door or something like that. I think it becomes more a symbol of it's so much a symbol of the holiday season that people trying to move on tend to get sick of them before they actually end up killing them and throw them out at that point. But people who are plant enthusiasts who want to see how long they can keep them, I know people who have poinsettias that are years old.
Really? And I mean, how much do they grow? I mean, how big are they?
They'll grow to a point where the best thing to do with them is the thing that you do with any plant, and that's you're going to prune them back and keep them small. No house plant do you really want to just let go and go and go, because plants will tend to get leggy and ugly looking. If you just let a poinsettia go, I'd imagine it would attain a height of maybe 3 or 4 feet before it starts busting itself apart. They get top heavy, and their stems really aren't all that strong.
If you do keep it, as far as pot-wise, when it starts to get big, how do you know when to repot it?
Well, the best thing with most houseplants is keep the plants comfortable. Don't up pot plants unless it's time. So a good rule of thumb is stick your finger down in the soil or stick a pencil down in the soil and see exactly how dense the root material is. And you want it to reach kind of a happy medium where if you were to stick a pencil down, you'd meet some resistance. You know, it wouldn't be impossible to push the pencil into the soil, but it would be, you'd feel some pushback from those roots. And another thing, if you want to be even more brave, is you'd actually lift the root ball out of the pot and take a look up and down the outsides and see how dense the roots have become. And any time that you're noticing a houseplant that the root percentage in your pot is probably 75% or greater, and you've only got about 25% soil, that is heading into the root-bound area, and it's ready to be moved. But most of the time, we'll notice that our houseplants will be maybe less than 50% rooted into their containers at any given time. And a common mistake we hear about is people take a plant home, and they will transplant it up immediately from a 6-inch diameter pot, and then they'll stick in a big 10-inch diameter pot. And all that loose extra soil around the root ball ends up holding water like a sponge and will end up causing the roots to rot. It keeps them too wet. So just being very conservative about the amount of times that you transplant a plant really helps it to stay more comfortable and happy in your house.
Okay. Well, you're listening to The Zesty Garden. Shane Taylor is on the line with us from Cactus and Tropicals in Salt Lake. And if you have an indoor plant question, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. You can go to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page and post your comment or question there, or go to our Zesty Garden Gmail address, zestygarden@gmail.com, and send your question there. We have only about 6 minutes left before we have to move on to the next segment, so get your questions or comments in soon. I wanted to ask you, Shane, about something that I had never really thought about before. I mean, I've heard the word terrarium, but now I'm seeing a vivarium. And basically, there's different types of vivariums, of which terrariums are one. Why don't you talk about what a vivarium is?
Well, a terrarium is the basic version of a vivarium. Terrariums are contained growing environments for plants. So like a fish tank with plants in it, or a small glass globe or something like that. Terrariums were very popular back in the 60s and 70s, and they're actually making quite a comeback right now as a good way to keep difficult to grow plants. And vivariums just take that a step further. A vivarium adds animals into the mix. So people who are enthusiastic about collecting poison dart frogs or chameleons or stuff like that, creating a little habitat for them to live in, that would be what a vivarium is.
And how large can these be? I guess you can have them as large as you want.
Yeah, they could be huge. Generally, you want to be able to control the factors within. So the bigger they get, the more difficult that can be. One of the gentlemen that worked here for quite a while was very knowledgeable about putting these together, and he'd make beautiful fish tank where they're 4 or 5 feet wide, maybe 3 feet high, and a foot or two deep, and it would just be neat to watch the balance of everything, how they got the soil and the water and the plants to live together in such a way that you don't have a bunch of mold or fungus or rot or stuff like that going on inside.
So a vivarium could be as large as, say, a biosphere like the one in Oracle, Arizona. I'm also thinking of maybe, would it be considered a vivarium if, like the bird sanctuary at, there's a museum in Tucson that's just full of birds and trees and things, and it's all enclosed.
Oh, we have the Sonoran Desert Museum. Yeah, they are, I would say there's probably a different term once they get into building size, whereas vivariums are probably going to be more looked at as being something something as large as a piece of furniture. But
so what do you need to have in a vivarium to make it work? What are the very basics if someone wants to get started?
The very basics is you need, first of all, you need something to put it in. You need a container that is closable, containable, where you can create this enclosed ecosystem. And you need to be able to provide a potting medium or something for the plants to actually put their roots into that will give them enough nutrient. But like many potting soils that have a lot of different little types of bacteria and fungal spores and stuff like that in there, you've got to use a potting medium that's limited with the amount of microbes and fungus and stuff in there so that you don't breed an excessive amount of bacteria or fungus. So in the past, I've seen vivariums planted with clay pellets or that shredded cocoa fiber as the potting medium. And then the last two pieces of the puzzle are the plants. What you put in there needs to be appropriate for the animals that you're going to have as well. So making sure the enthusiasts that come into the shop looking for plants for their poison dart frogs are often looking for bromeliads, which are a beautiful epiphytic plant that grow up on trees in the rainforest. And they're looking for different types of ferns and different types of philodendrons, and ideally stuff that won't get too large in this contained environment, because plants in a high humidity environment with access to moisture, and of course the animals in there, as they live, they're actually producing, you know, as they poop in the soil, that's part of the ecosystem that's giving the plants fertilizer. So plants will grow like weeds in vivariums and terrariums.
So how do you keep enough moisture in there? I mean, is it you just start out, do you have like a small water feature that's inside of it? And because it's an enclosed environment, it just kind of recycles itself?
That you can do that. Adding a water feature into the environment will keep a lot of water. So if you want a really moist vivarium, you can use a water feature. The cocoa fiber and the clay pellets will actually absorb quite a bit of water, and you'll end up with this sort of this feedback of the plants pull the water out of the cocoa fiber, they push it through the plant, they push it out of their leaves, and you end up with humidity, which then goes back into the soil. So one of the biggest dangers is not adding, it's adding too much water to the system. You got to be careful just to add the right amount so that it can keep that sort of cycle going on. I actually have experimental terrariums that I work on that do not have any animals. They just have plants in them. And I've got some enclosed terrariums that have now been closed with no water added for about 7 months now.
Wow. And so when you have too much, what are the signs of you've got too much water in there? You've got mold algae growing on the side of the terrarium?
Yep, you get algae, you'll get mold. You'll notice that the plants will start dying. You'll get a lot of yellowing. Plants will turn mushy and just go limp. It really is one of those things that if you balance it just right from the beginning, you'll end up with a very low maintenance system on your hands.
Well, we've reached the end of our time. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with me this morning and talking about poinsettias and vivariums.
Well, thanks, Brian. I look forward to doing it again sometime.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Shane Taylor is with Cactus and Tropicals in Salt Lake City, and we'll be having him on in the future talking about different household plants to have in your house or not to have in your house. Coming up next is the latest from Petals and Pros with Helen Cannon.